I have Alzheimer's, but it doesn't have me because I don't allow it to define who I am.
You are listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness, your number one resource for practical tips and insights, empowering you and your family to live well with Alzheimer's. Hello and welcome to the Alzheimer's Podcast, episode 18. I'm Mike Good of Togetherness. Thank you for joining me for another podcast, where my goal is always to empower you to maintain a positive experience, reduce and eliminate the need for medications, and make your time together with those you care for the best it can be. Today, I'm excited to have Brian LeBlanc join me. In 2014, Brian was diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's disease at the young age of 54. Now, if you've listened to my last two episodes, 16 and 17, then you've heard me talk about the importance and the value of listening to and learning from people who are living with Alzheimer's or another dementia. This is a very misunderstood disease, and people with dementia still matter, can contribute to society, and have a wealth of knowledge to share. But we must listen. And with his raw honesty, Brian is someone we should all listen to and learn from. He is an international dementia advocate with a mission to advocate, educate, and spread awareness about Alzheimer's and other dementia-related illnesses. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Well, thanks, Mike. I appreciate that. I also appreciated you telling me, you saying that I was a young 54 years old. Yeah. So,
well, the younger I get, or the older I get, the younger 54 seems.
Exactly. At 57 now, it sounds very young for me.
Yeah. We're meeting more and more people your age who are sharing their stories of having Alzheimer's or other dementia. Do you want to go ahead and share with our audience here about your diagnosis?
Sure. It's a lot of people that I've spoken with kind of had the same experience in what led them to get diagnosed. Mine was I was driving to my doctor's office one day, and I got completely lost. And this is the doctor that I've been going to for years. I had no idea where I was. I had, there was nothing looked familiar, no landmarks that I recognized or anything. Mm. So I called my wife and I, you know, I guess I was in a panic, but she was very calm. She helped me put, the coordinates into my phone in my Google Map, function. And I was only about a half a mile from the doctor's office. Wow. And so I got there and went home. But that night, I have what's called the intervention. And I walked into the living room, and my wife and daughter were sitting on a couch and asked me to join them. And I felt like I was in trouble, you know, that I did something wrong.
Right.
And my wife, her name is Shannon. Shannon, I guess, detected that. She goes, "Relax, you didn't do anything wrong. Just sit down. We want to talk." And so she, right off, she asked me, she said, "Do you know how many times in the last 6 months you have been lost while driving?" I said, "Seriously?" I said, "You mean before today?" And she said, and she kind of chuckled. She says, "Yeah." And I said, "I thought today was the first time." And she goes, that's kind of what I was afraid of. Mm. And then so she told me, she says, "You know, you've been lost, you know, a dozen times in the last 6 months."
Oh, wow.
And I had no recollection. None whatsoever.
Wow.
And then my daughter, Ashton, she said, "And you know, you have been telling the same stories and asking the same questions over and over again." And she goes, "And I know you don't realize it, because when you tell a funny story, you laugh just as hard at the 20th time you've told it than you did it the first time." So Now, coming from a family that, you know, my great-grandmother, my grandfather, my mother, my mother was living at the time, still living with Alzheimer's. My grandfather passed away in 1985, and my great-grandmother passed away, I guess, in the very, very, the late 1800s. And then my dad had passed away in 2010 with vascular dementia.
Mm-hmm.
So knowing that in the back of my mind and them telling me all this, I kind of started to panic a little bit.
I just want to say that I've read a lot of your writings, especially recently in preparation for this podcast, and I must say your family is, I can tell they're very strong. You're a loving family, and it took a lot of courage for them just to do the intervention. I applaud them for doing that.
Well, they know that I probably wouldn't have done anything because I didn't know.
Right, right.
And so they had to step up. And I don't mean to switch gears or anything, but you know, I'm fortunate,
mm-hmm.
and I say that all the time in having the type of support system that I have.
Right.
There are many people that I have come to know that some of them live alone,
mm-hmm.
and they don't have that support system. Some of them live with their families, and they still don't have that support system. It's the toughest job, I think, that a human can have in taking care of someone who they know won't get better.
That's true. It's definitely extremely hard. And for those families out there that say haven't had Alzheimer's or dementia in their family and have no experience with it, I'm sure it's even harder for them to just figure out what's going on, and because, you know, we're taught all our lives it's a memory issue, but
right.
it goes way beyond memory, and we're hearing a lot more how navigation or the inability to navigate, such as in your instance, is one of the early symptoms a lot of times,
right?
Which I found interesting when you wrote about that it was what actually. Now, they said, we're telling you were having some memory issues, but the navigation part came to the forefront as well.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
And so did your wife, and since you had a family member with Alzheimer's alive at the time, Shannon maybe had actually seen Alzheimer's firsthand at that point?
Well, yeah. Because added to that, her grandmother...
Okay.
Had just passed away in August,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
of 2014.
From dementia?
She had Alzheimer's.
Okay.
So, and then this was, I don't remember when exactly, they told me, whether it was before that or after that. I do know that, the anniversary of my diagnosis is coming up in 2 weeks on the 28th.
Okay.
That's when I received my first of four diagnoses with Alzheimer's.
I see. And this issue where I was kind of talking about how families are unaware of what to expect because they've never seen it, that's kind of to our topic of how Alzheimer's is so misunderstood. And people, you know, we were brought up our lives. We picture grandma rocking in her rocking chair in the corner with some senility, just saying weird stuff every now and then, maybe. But in fact, it's people like you. It's people like David Kramer and Lori Scherer, who I interviewed in the last two episodes. We're rubbing elbows with you guys in the grocery stores. You're out and about. Some of you are still holding down jobs when you're able to, and you're part of family. You're a key part of your family, And that's really something that you talked to me the other day about when you went to the Dementia Action Alliance, I believe it was called, in June, that you were able to really go there and feel comfortable and not feel judged. And the theme of that was engage, empower, and enable.
Yes, that was the theme of the conference.
You want to tell us anything about that conference, or
it's like this, okay? When you go to, I'm from New Orleans originally, and went to many. I used to be a season ticket holder for the Saints.
Okay,
win, lose, or be humiliated. we stood by them. We all wore bags on our head, but we all did it.
Right.
We can criticize our team, but don't let anybody else criticize our team.
Right.
Because we all come together. Okay. We are all one, and we respect one another, and we understand one another.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what it was like. That's the atmosphere that Jackie Pinkowitz, who is the executive director, and Karen Love, who is the CEO of Dementia Action Alliance, that's the tone that they wanted for this conference, is that we, the people living with dementia, were what it was all about. It wasn't about the sponsors. It wasn't about the people that came to listen. It was about inclusion. It was about making sure that we were not singled out, but that we were the main part of the conference.
Mm-hmm, right.
And just to be in the same room, that was the first time that I met the two of the people that you just mentioned, David Kramer and Lori Shearer.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first time I had met them in person. I had talked to and seen them many times on video conferences and telephone conversations. So you get a feel for who that person is. But when you can walk up and shake their hand or give them a hug, you have this instant bond with that person.
Right.
And that's how it, when you put us all in the same room together, it's kind of like a warm blanket that just kind of came around all of us.
Right, right.
And it was a very, very safe place where we basically kind of felt normal,
mm-hmm.
except for the times that we didn't. And then the times that we didn't feel normal, whether it be anxiety, whether it be confusion, any type of feelings that came over us, whoever was nearest could see that, and they would come over and say, "Are you okay? Why don't we go?" We had a quiet room set up,
mm-hmm.
so that we could walk down to the quiet room, just sit, mm-hmm. and out of the hustle and bustle, out of the noise, and it was just amazing.
That's just really great to hear, and I'm happy that more and more organizations are doing that, and including the person who's living with dementia. And I'm sure the majority of other people there were probably dementia care professionals who, have that compassion and the empathy to make you feel comfortable and to not judge you and just treat you like a normal person and help you when you maybe have a struggle or something. And I can't even imagine what that must feel like. And so that's just really incredible. It's so important and invaluable that you and others with the disease are coming out of the closet, as David Kramer said in my interview with him, but coming out of the closet so that the general public starts to see that side and starts to have the compassion and the empathy required or needed, to make everybody feel included in life, if you will.
Exactly. And I saw that you had talked about my blog earlier, and I saw that you had read the post that says Alzheimer's has two faces.
Yeah, an incredible post. It's a must read, and I'll include it in the show notes.
and oh, thank you. Yeah. But the reason why I did that is because for what you just said. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes, there are more and more of us coming out of the closet. However, on the way back from getting my diagnosis, I don't remember too much about anything else other than hearing, yes, you have Alzheimer's, you have two copies of the APOE4 protein, mm-hmm. and that was about it. So we're on our way back home, and I think Shannon and I were both kind of in shock, but then I had a revelation, and I just blurted it out. I said, I know what I need to do. And she said, what? I said, I need to talk about this. And she said, really? I said, yeah. I said, I don't know how to do anything else. And she goes, I realize that, but I will give you these words, which I hope you remember. And for some strange reason, I do. She says, once you put it out there, you can't take it back.
Right.
So we come out the closet and then we start advocating. And then people see us mm-hmm. talking about it. They see us advocating. They see us standing up there, you know, reading a speech because, you know, God knows, should we get up in front of 1,000 people and have to memorize something? That I said, that ain't going to happen. So, you know, you have speeches and you have your PowerPoints and so forth. And that's what they see.
Right.
And then later they say, you know, you sound so polished and you sound this and you sound that, you know, and then you have the people that say, are you sure you have Alzheimer's?
Right.
And then I said, yeah, I said, I tell you what, I said, I'll give you my address. I said, and I want you to come to my house at any day, unannounced, and just show up. Knock on my door, I open the door, and there you'll stand. And I said, and you will see this polished, well-speaking person collapse into a heap on the floor and cry like a baby because you were not supposed to be there.
Oh, my.
You are something that came out of the blue, and it was not in my day plan.
Right.
It wasn't on my calendar. So if it's not on my calendar, it's not happening.
Hmm.
My sister did that one time. She thought it would be a great idea to stop in and surprise me. And that's exactly what happened. I opened the door and there stood her and my brother-in-law. Now, the last time that I saw them, they came to visit in, let's see, I don't know what month it was, but they came to see me, and the last time that I saw them was when my mother passed away. And so I don't know whether it was that thought that passed through my mind or whether it was, what are you doing here? You're not supposed to be here. You didn't let me know. And it's not on my phone. That's what I kept on saying. It's not on my phone. It's not on my phone. They spent a couple of hours here, and I could not make conversation.
Wow.
And so they stayed in a hotel overnight, and she called me around 7 o'clock in the morning, and we had a great conversation on the phone. She goes, now we're coming over to see you in about an hour. Is that okay? I said, oh, good. I'd be happy to see you and this, that, and the other. I'm paraphrasing, but
sure.
I didn't really remember too much from the day before. I had to be reminded of that. Mm-hmm. And then I wrote it down, and that's how I can refer back to that. But we had a tremendous visit. It's because I knew they were coming. And then it was expected. Hmm. And things like that people do not see.
Right.
They don't see me getting up from a chair and taking a couple of steps and falling, you know, because my balance is gone.
Right.
they look at me now, and if you look at me, a picture of me maybe 2 years ago, you will see a guy that weighed somewhere in the neighborhood of 225 pounds. I now weigh 150.
Wow. I did notice that, by the way.
Yeah. And it's because, number one, I was forgetting to eat.
Oh, my.
So I have reminders on my phone to tell me to eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner at specific times. I have reminders to tell me when to take my medication. But what has happened in the last, I guess, year is that I have lost a big part of my sense of smell, which has affected my sense of taste.
Okay.
Which, you know, I'm from New Orleans. You know, food was, it wasn't just a meal, it was an activity.
Exactly. So.
And I've lost that now.
Yeah, so why eat if you can't taste it, right?
Exactly. I just don't, yeah. I don't like the taste of food anymore.
Right.
And it really, really upsets me.
Right.
So I try to eat things that are tasteful.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they just happen to be fruits and vegetables and things like that. So I'm eating healthy. I'm not really enjoying it that much because I would love to much rather bite into a juicy hamburger.
Right.
But, you know. What's the use? I mean, I can't taste it.
Well, that sucks. I don't know how else to say it. That sucks because food is such a great pleasure in life, and I know that when you can smell good food, the taste buds start salivating, and the next thing you know, your stomach's like telling you, "Hey, I want to eat." So there is some kind of you know, that sensory, that stimulation does set something in motion, and if your smell's gone, then that's not going to happen. And so, Brian, I want to mention on talking about how, you know, you're saying Alzheimer's, you wrote about how Alzheimer's has two faces.
Yeah.
What struck me about that is, well, you and I had a conversation just a couple of days ago, and then I went and read that article afterwards, and you wrote that a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
And today, and even in our conversation the other day, if I didn't know it, I wouldn't know you have Alzheimer's because you are coming across polished. You're coming across very articulate, and there's no reason for me to think otherwise.
Well, I get a notification every time somebody either likes or comments on one of my blog posts.
Right.
So in my email, I saw that you had liked it.
And I did. I immediately shared it too, because it's, again, I think it's something that, you know, when someone like you or Marty Schottenheimer, ex-NFL football coach, can, you know, come out and share with the public what they're going through, what you're going through on a daily basis, and help us understand that compassion and empathy that we can gain from it, it's only going to help the future people, you know, it's going to help the future, not only them, but it's going to help everybody that gets a diagnosis in the future, so...
Exactly. But that blog post was not just what affected me. The blog post was about the change in which Shannon saw.
Exactly.
You know, and for those of you, but I want to go back to this. And the reason why I can talk about that right now is I saw that you liked it. I saw that you read it. And I said, I wonder if he's going to talk about this. So I went and reread the art. I went and reread my blog post just to refresh myself.
Sure.
So that, you know, because to be honest with you, if I don't know something, I will try to talk about it. But you will know in an instant that I don't know what I'm talking about because I will stutter.
I will
sound really incoherent. Because I will just forget. I will forget my words, right, which I do normally. But and that's the part that people, like, you know, that's what I wrote about, mm-hmm, is that my family sees the real me.
Right.
They don't see the polished person.
Right.
They see the guy that falls. And, you know, but to tell you how they respect me, and I mean this seriously, in that, you know, when something happens, you know, they used to just react with, oh my God, is everything okay? Are you all right? And, you know, I said, look, I said, I'm going to fall. I said, Joe, so it's going to happen. It's okay. It's just part of what I do now.
Mm-hmm.
So now, if it used to be they used to get all excited, now I'll get up and I'll fall. They don't move. They just sit where they sit and say, hey, you okay?
As long as you get up, right? Right.
You okay? And I say, yeah, just leave me here for a few.
I'm sure it's hard for them, though, to do that.
But. It is, but they're respecting right. My wishes in not making a big deal about it, because it, when they made it, and it's a natural. I would probably do the same thing.
Oh, of course.
But my natural reaction is, you know, let me help. But then that when they did that, I would inadvertently lash out at them.
Sure.
And say, yeah, leave me alone. I'll be all right.
I'm a big, strong man. I don't need your
exactly.
help. Right?
Our
ego kicks in. And so, Brian, we are, believe it or not, we're already coming up on our 30-minute mark. And But I know it goes fast. To help with training people who maybe don't understand the face of Alzheimer's and dementia, if you will. I believe you told me you have what's called a crisis intervention team training that
yes.
you have to help law enforcement and first responders. And I'd love to give you a little bit of time to talk about that.
Well, basically, say for instance, I'm driving down a road and I get frustrated, or I get discombobulated. That's the only word I can think of right now.
That works.
I get lost, and you know, I'm just completely confused. Well, in that state of confusion, I run a stop sign, or I run a red light, or don't pay attention to a yield sign, and I start driving erratically. Well, when they pull me over, one of the first things that and I've asked them this, the first thing that they think of is, I am impaired through alcohol,
right,
or impaired through drugs. And I say, well, you would think that. However, I said, if you came across me, that would not be the case. I said, now you approach the car, you look inside, you see no open container. So you think, okay, it's not alcohol. I can't smell any alcohol. Then you think, oh, maybe it's drugs.
Right.
I said, but do you ever look on my keychain? And I see this look of confusion. I said, if you look on my keychain, you will see the medic alert button on my keychain that says that not only do I have type 2 diabetes and heart disease, but I have a cognitive impairment. I said, have y'all ever thought to check that? Have you ever looked for a bracelet on their arm? It could be, you know, there's a whole number of things. Don't just assume that person is alcohol impaired or drug impaired.
Mm-hmm.
There could be several things other than that. Just start asking questions, but don't be accusatory. Because if you become accusatory, I'm going to become anxious. I'm going to become even more confused, wanting to know, why are you asking me these questions when I'm not drunk, I'm not drug impaired, you know, I have Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
then your next reaction is going to be, you're looking at me, and what are you going to think? And I ask them that question, they say, well, you don't look like you have Alzheimer's.
Right.
I said, exactly.
Right.
So
right.
I said, we walk among you,
mm-hmm.
you know? And we go through this whole thing to where we go through scenarios of, you know, what to look for, how to approach.
Right.
I go into a whole, you know, a whole gamut of things, only because they're the first ones that are going to come upon an accident or come upon anything like that. And I want them to know. And the reaction that I get from them is just unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause they'll come up and say, we never knew that.
Right.
You know, we so appreciate you doing this. They all have my card. They call me from the field. Mm-hmm. And they say, hey, I want you to know that I, you know, came upon this person. I followed what you said. Come to find out, they had a dementia-related illness. We got them home safely, and nothing's been done.
Oh, that's great to hear that they're following up and letting you know. And I just want to share with the audience. I believe you actually do not drive anymore.
No.
Right. So you've lost that piece of that independence, and I know that's tough. And but in every state, I believe, has different laws about who can and cannot drive with dementia. So right. It's
now, this was kind of like a voluntary thing. My doctor did not tell me that I can't, but she strongly recommended it.
Right.
And so we kind of made a decision at that time not to.
And I believe I read you wrote, and it makes a lot of sense. I couldn't live with hurting somebody, essentially, is what you said. Yeah.
As if I don't have enough to live with. If I did that, I would never be able to forgive myself.
Well, I applaud you for that, and I know how, I can only imagine how hard that decision was.
I do want to share one last thing, and I usually close out with this because this is what keeps me going. It's my mantra, and my mantra is: I have Alzheimer's, but it doesn't have me because I don't allow it to define who I am. And as long as I keep that at the present mind, it keeps me going. So,
that was awesome, Brian. I really appreciate it. I really think it's just incredible and so important that you and others continue to share your struggles and your stories, and doing the training to help other organizations that may never, you know, have a reason to understand. So keep it up. Keep inspiring other people who have dementia. I really thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Mike, for allowing me to be here with you today.
And I want to thank the audience for joining us. And please help spread Brian and other people who have dementia. Help spread their word and let people, you know, the general public, learn and, you know, build some compassion and understand that people with dementia still matter, can contribute to society, and have a wealth of knowledge to share. Be sure to check out the show notes at togetherinthis.com, episode 18, where you'll find a link to Brian's blog as well as any other mentioned resources. So remember, engage, empower, and enable. Bye now. You've been listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness. For more information and to get the resources mentioned in this episode, visit togetherinthis.com/podcast.